Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Today, my name is Terry Fletcher. Hope everyone's having a good May. So today I'm actually going to talk about a topic that I haven't talked about before. And I know every once in a while I say that and you're thinking, how can you do that with over 340 topics and of discussion? And it's amazing how just sometimes in, you know, the business of healthcare, you find so many topics and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I've never actually talked on that in almost 7 years of the podcast. So let me talk about something that I think is going to hit home with quite a few people, and especially providers, not just physicians, but NPPs, and especially medical staff, because I'm sure you see this in your EMR, and you're probably thinking, okay, we probably shouldn't put that in there, but the doctor wants it in there. So what I'm talking about is a medical disclaimer and saying that, you know, these errors are not ours. So, you know, we're not responsible for anything that we're reading within that note. And here's the thing, and I hate it when people say that, but so the question is, and some medical staff members have reached out to me, my Coding Corner members have, and they want to add a disclaimer, something like, please note that this dictation was completed with computer voice recognition software. Of course, now I hear AI. And it says, quite often unanticipated grammatical, syntax, homophones, and other interpretive errors are inadvertently transcribed by the computer software. Please disregard these errors. Please excuse my errors that have escaped the final proofreading. Or they want to say, we are not responsible for any of those errors. So is that disclaimer enough? Does that help the physician? Or does it increase the physician's risk of liability? And this comes up actually often enough where I'm reading a note that I am auditing, I'm reviewing a note, and I'm thinking, this note is terrible. It doesn't even relate to the reason the patient came in. And then I see that disclaimer at the end of the note, and I'm thinking, that's not going to help you here. Here is one I got from a client actually today that said, actually scared me to death, said, we retain the right to modify this information in the event of errors without notice. It says, this report was generated by voice dictation system. Errors in punctuation, grammar, and content will occur. The patient has been advised to follow up with appointments. The patient has been informed that noncompliance with his recommendation could result in serious consequences. It's also been disclosed to the patient that we expect the patient to take an active role in their health care. And I just thought, wait a minute, you're saying that we have the right to modify this information in the event of errors without notice? No, you don't. You can put in an addendum. You can't say that you can change anything. And when I read that, I the hair on the back of my neck stood up. I went, that's just so far beyond a disclaimer and you know, disclosure or anything like that. But here's, you know, some of the legal things that I have found on this. And this came from several different legal opinions and also the Journal of Medical Ethics. And also when I get into this further, I'm going to tell you a couple of things that happened and was illuminated from the NIL and also the Journal of Medical Ethics. But here's something that I have found, and I contacted a couple of my own healthcare attorneys that I work with. And they said, you know, these disclaimers actually increase the physician's risk of liability. Also, WPS, Medicare, which is Wisconsin Physician Services, Noridian, Novitas. When you get into these Medicare MAC carriers, contractors, they also say this, and this was just from WPS right on their website. They said disclaimers used as part of the physician's signature. They said WPS GHA has recently been informed of a new trend in medical record documentation that using some type of disclaimer is appropriate. Our examples include, due to possible errors in transcription, there may be errors in documentation. Due to voice recognition software, sound alike and misspelled words may be contained in the documentation. And I am not responsible for errors due to transcription. And I mean, you could tell their heads were exploding here, because then emphasized with bold and underlined, they said, providers are responsible for the medical record documentation. Disclaimers such as those above do not remove that responsibility. The provider should verify the information is complete and accurate prior to attaching his or her signature, which was required for billing. And they said, I agree, you know, this disclaimer and the legal team that I consult with, they say that does not shield a physician from liability for errors in the medical records. It doesn't matter if the error is caused by voice recognition software, a transcriptionist, or whatever, the physician's signature on the record, that means your physician confirmed that the information is accurate and complete, and a disclaimer cannot be used to evade that responsibility. You know, this carrier, Noridian, also makes clear that disclaimers cannot help physicians. In fact, there is also reason to believe that such disclaimers can actually harm physicians, not only physicians, but patients. If a disclaimer is used, an injured patient may claim in a malpractice suit that the physician was too busy to review the accuracy of the entry or simply was just unconcerned. All healthcare professionals know that transcription errors in medical records can harm patients. This may explain why juries have no sympathy or tolerance for physicians who would attempt to use a disclaimer to avoid responsibility for closely reviewing the medical record before signing it. And not only are juries offended by these disclaimers, I've seen it in, you know, depositions I've done, but they offer an easy target again for malpractice attorneys. So I asked both sides. I asked two defense healthcare attorneys, and then I asked two malpractice attorneys, and then I asked an attorney who does both. And so they've been on both sides of the courtroom. And here's their take. Defense attorneys I contacted don't want the disclaimer anywhere in the note. But the plaintiff attorney says, oh, I love the idea, and then proceeded to tell me how they would rip the author of those notes to shreds, even if no errors were found in the note. And they just had some, you know, approaches that I can't even say here because it's a little bit too spicy for even my podcast. But they just went on to how they would discredit the author simply due to the presence of a disclaimer in a medical note. I'm not kidding you. And here was an example of a case, and this was horrible. It says you're halfway through a busy clinic afternoon. You're seeing a patient, a middle-aged man with hypertension. His blood pressure diary indicates he's above your therapeutic target, and you decide to add a new antihypertensive drug to his regimen. You write a prescription, the nurse faxes it to the pharmacy, and you move on to the next patient. And that fax also ended up in the medical record. 2 days later, you're called by the emergency room about this patient who became dizzy while getting his morning paper. He fell on his porch, hit his head, sustaining a forehead laceration. After careful evaluation, showed only postural hypotension, and his laceration was closed. So then the physician goes to say hello to him, see the patient, but he sees his medication bottles at bedside, just happens to take a look, and the physician found that the hospital pharmacy dispensed the new drug at 10 times the dose that they intended. The physician stepped out of the room, collected himself, and said, okay, now what? And just thought, what am I going to do here? So, you know, sometimes the physician gets pretty upset, obviously, because they're trying to figure out how did this error happen? You know, where was the hole? Where was the leakage? They get defensive. But it's mostly because of fear, and not just of what could happen to them, but what could happen to the patient. You know, and patients, they want to know that the error occurred. They want to know what happened and how, which doesn't always sit well, but they also want an apology and figure out what, you know, what's going to happen here. So when you look at what happened, so let's say the physician called the pharmacy and here they dispensed the dose that was on the prescription and they faxed back the prescription to the physician to prove it. You see that there was a decimal point that you think is pretty clear, or the physician thought, but the pharmacist and the ER nurse disagreed. And then, of course, the physician's angry that nobody questioned or queried the prescription. They just went forward with it. And so now the physician has to call the patient advocate that's at the hospital, and it's just a mess. They talk to the patient and say, okay, here's what happened. And of course, the patient is furious and blames the physician, saying, you almost killed me. And so now again, the doctor has to, you know, walk everything back, said, you know, they were most likely the side effects of higher than intended dose, but it doesn't look like you have any further side effects that are anticipated. Now, once the patient calms down, this case, the patient did express interest and continue with that physician, thank them for being honest, and they will give them another chance. But you better believe that that patient, if anything else went wrong, that doctor's going to be just malpractice suit to death. So here's the problem. You can't get out of not just errors, because errors are going to happen. It's human nature. But to say that you're not responsible for errors in documentation that now have been, I don't want to say manipulated, but how about that have been created and are taking the place sometimes of physician input. We have a lot of clinical staff members that are not licensed professionals that are in our EMR, that are transcribing notes, that are putting things in like scribes, the physician said. And if the physician isn't clear in what they said and isn't reviewing that record before that record is not only signed off on, but before it is dispensed to the patient, such as that prescription, or they're, you know, being told they need not just medicines, but treatment that really wasn't the intent of the physician, and they didn't review the note, there is no disclaimer. There is no disclaimer that's going to protect you from that. And so I just really implore you to update this compliance issue in your practice if you haven't revisited it in a long time, because there's a lot of problems right now in medical records that I'm seeing from an auditing perspective, and I just don't want you to get in trouble. Okay, so the CodeCast podcast is also brought to you today by Just Coding, your online continuing education destination. Pay one price and earn dozens of AAPC, ACDIS, and AHIMA credits annually. Save 10% off a new prescription using coupon code SAVE10. Visit justcoding.com to subscribe. Okay, so I have my coding question for today, and it was actually from a new member. So thank you, Jerry, for this question. I think a lot of people have this question sometimes. So it says, I have two surgeons from the same tax ID, same group practice, but different taxonomy codes, which for Medicare, that means they are listed as different specialists, rounding on a patient in the hospital, one for trauma and one for wound care. How do we bill it? So it's not cut and dry, unfortunately. What this really is remember, in the hospital setting, it's per stay, but it does say per specialty, same group practice, same specialty or subspecialty. And it's interesting because is wound care part of trauma? Well, some payers believe it is. And taxonomy codes are Medicare, where they do have some designations for different specialties. But some of the payers say, for example, I know electrophysiology and cardiology have two taxonomy codes, but I know that there's several payers out there that say that anything that also has to do with the heart is just a subspecialty of cardiology. So you have to know what your payer says before you can actually figure out what's the best way to report it. I can give you with Medicare and especially also CPT what they say. When it's the same tax ID or same group practice and the specialty, I'm going to say is similar, so they could be subspecialties of each other, you may have a hard time with billing two rounding visits on the same day, because the rules now say during that stay it could be a collective one visit. I would, in this case, because there are two taxonomy codes, I would try and attempt to bill. Obviously, if you try to bill the same diagnosis, same level of service, you're going to get something denied. That's just what's going to happen with the computer edits for payers. But bill truthfully on the level of service for each provider, and then their specific diagnosis from a rounding visit, and hopefully that reimbursement or that EOB will tell you what that payer is saying about this. And then if you get a denial on one or the other, that's when you want to go back to the payer and say, I need a written policy on this so we know how to handle it. And so just know that nothing is black and white when it comes to this, because you're asking about taxonomy codes, which is a Medicare differentiation of specialties and subspecialties, versus CPT and what they say about specialty and subspecialty and during the hospital stay. It's easy in the office. In the office, it's new or established patient and the subspecialties. In the hospital setting, it's a little bit tricky because we don't deal with new and established patient situation. We just deal with during the stay and the same group practice. So just something to consider when you're looking at those options there. So on a personal note, I just wanted to say belated Happy Mother's Day to anyone who celebrated on Sunday. I know I had a very nice Mother's Day. Didn't get to see my daughter, but got to Zoom. She got me a very nice hot pot for tea in the evening. So I appreciate that because mine broke. But you know, and even if you're not a mom, but if you're a grandmother, if you are somebody's like mom where they really consider you their mom, if you're a fur baby mom, so you've got pets, you're still a mom. So, and should be celebrating that day. So I hope you had a good day. And we really hope that you're enjoying your May. So everyone, make it a great day. Make it a great rest of your week. And thank you for listening to the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer DeSassin Music.